Welcome back to the Office 365 Fundamentals course. My name's Alistair Spears.
And I'm Ian Hameroff.
So we're up to module 5 of our Office 365 Fundamentals course, Office 365 Service Communications. So these last two sessions we'll be talking about service communications and change management, two really important components for you to think about as an IT pro. Before we begin on the service communication session, Ian, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Great, thanks, Alistair. So again, my name's Ian Hameroff, and I lead the Office 365 Service Experience team based here in Redmond. And my team is responsible for leading the communication, the processes, and the experiences that are aimed at helping build confidence in our service and for our customers throughout their life cycle while they're on Office 365.
Great. Now, service communications, it feels like a big sort of different approach in terms of how Microsoft's really dealt with customers in the past. Like when you're running the on-premises software, perhaps we don't need to communicate with you as much as we do when we're your service provider through Office 365. So can you tell us through some of the things that we'll cover in this session?
Sure. I hope over the next 60 minutes to give you a glimpse into what I think is one of the most critical aspects of being successful in running on a service like Office 365. Mm. And I think you touched on a really important point. It's about setting the right expectations and making sure that you know what it's going to be going into the service. Because let's be honest, there's going to be things that are different. So over this time, I hope to touch on topics like our communications philosophy and how we communicate different forms of change. Because this is going to be something different for you. And I hope this session and others to follow will give you a good sense of what you're looking forward to as you move on to the Office 365 service.
So as IT pros, we really don't like surprises. And so can you talk us through some of the kind of philosophy that we have around service communications to make sure IT pros are really informed about how their service will evolve from them using it?
Yeah, and I think before we dive into the service communications philosophy, it's first important to spend a little time setting some context. Mm-hmm. Now, first off, we're talking about Office 365, and Office 365 is this fantastic solution we're bringing to the market. It is our vision for productivity in the cloud, mm-hmm. and you know, as this slide shows, we bring together the best of what Office provides on our enterprise-grade cloud. We give you all the important productivity services. There's plenty of flexibility and choice involved. And of course, with it being Office, it's very familiar.
Absolutely.
And easy to use. Mm-hmm. But there's also a number of things that are different when you start using Office 365. And one of those big ones is the changes that you're going to experience. I think all of our customers and ourselves personally are used to what we like to call these waves of innovation. Mm-hmm. You know, we install Exchange Server 2010, and then at some period of time, we install Exchange Server 2013. And there's a big uplift in the features and functionality that we are now suddenly being faced with, either as end users or even as IT pros.
Yeah.
With Office 365 and being an evergreen cloud service, we're shifting away from waves and more towards ripples of innovation.
Right.
What this means is instead of that 2 to 3 year cycle, new features and functionality and changes could be coming to the service as often as every 2 to 3 weeks.
Right.
Now, this is a very important thing to get your head wrapped around because this is one of the first elements of being successful in the cloud. And as part of that, because of this change, and because what change brings, it's really critical that you, as users and IT professionals helping support your users in your environments, it's critical for you to understand what this change actually means, the types of changes that you could be seeing, and probably the most important reason why we're here today to talk about service communications. Is how important, how clear, predictable, and reliable service change communications is going to be a very important element to your success. And it's very important to us, too, at Microsoft, because we see this as a partnership between us here and the Office 365 team and with our customers as they're taking advantage of the cloud.
Absolutely. And we talked in earlier modules how we shouldn't really treat Office 365 as a black box. You know, we can't just treat it as a set and forget sort of service. This is a very core part of our business. So it's important for all IT pros, whether you're using SharePoint, whether you're using Exchange Online or Link Online, to really understand how Microsoft is trying to communicate with you so you can plan around it and you can make sure that that service experience continues. a few users.
Yeah, and I think a great place to start is let's talk about the four different types of change that you could expect while you're on the service. And you know, we've done our best as we've been running this service for some time now to categorize all these changes into these four categories. And the first is probably the most consistently asked one is, you know, what's all this new functionality that's coming to the service? You know, as you know, with Office 365, we're able to deliver new features, updates to existing features, even introduce whole new scenarios. And we do so on a regular cadence. And these can happen across any parts of the service at any time. So that's a very important first form of communication. Of change. The next type is things that happen a little bit behind the scenes. And that's what we like to call platform updates. And this is some of the things that you're actually subscribing to a service like Office 365 for us to take care of. Keeping servers patched, making sure security updates are delivered at a very fast rate so vulnerabilities are addressed immediately. But sometimes platform updates can also have an impact on your experience. You know, this could mean that we may be deprecating functionality. It may mean that there are changes to APIs, or there may be some steps you need to take, for example, to configure MX records, DNS settings, and other of similar ilk to ensure that your service continuity is continuous. The next type of change, and this is somewhat related to the one we just discussed, is our evolving system requirements. Now, we'll go into more details about what this actually means, but it is important to note that while we're taking care of the important things on the services side, keeping Exchange, SharePoint, Link, and other things up to date and evergreen, there's still a responsibility for you as users and as IT professionals supporting these users to make sure that the clients and the browsers and the applications you use to connect to Office 365 are the most current, so you can get the best experience and for what we design for when we deliver functionality to Office 365. Now, lastly, the last type of change we like to talk about is what we call service incidents. And this is a case where something may have gone on in the service that has interrupted your service experience. And they can range in different size and scope. And we spend a lot of time, particularly on my team, thinking through what is the best way to get you information about when something is happening in the service, whether it's a minor interruption or a large scale one, so you can keep your users current and up to date on what's happening. And most importantly, you can have confidence in us that we're on the situation and we're rapidly working to resolve it.
Great. And so that's one of the really interesting things I think about Office 365 is that we often know what the problems in the service are even before you do, before you've called the Office 365 support desk or anything like that. We have all of our logging that's triggered these sorts of things. So straight away, you can actually see the response of the service, and you're going to see the response of our incident management team kicking into gear to try and solve these service incidents. And you have visibility of that without even having to call support.
Yeah, in fact, a big part of this is about being transparent. And providing you the level of transparency, and that's done so through communications. And I think this is a great segue to talk a little bit more about what's our philosophy around communicating to you across any of these type of changes. And I think it's best described through these four attributes. And again, much like the time we spent to think through the four different categories of change, we did spend a lot of time being extremely thoughtful about our communication philosophy. Now, I will say these are both what we're doing today and our aspirations at the same time. So some things you're probably already experiencing today from our philosophy, and other things you'll just continue seeing us invest against these four areas. Great. And the first is being timely. I think, Alistair, you mentioned about getting ahead when we see something, unfortunately, go wrong in the service, or there's a service interruption. Well, we want to be extremely timely in informing you about that incident so you're made aware and you can adjust as necessary, as well as keep your own folks informed, particularly your management and leadership. But timely is also important when we think about the other categories of change, whether it's our evolving system requirements, where you get enough advance notice so you can make the changes and roll out the changes on your clients and your devices. Or what about when we introduce new features and functionality? Mm-hmm. Is it give you an appropriate level of notice so you can prepare for user adoption and readiness and know how to really embrace the new functionality, innovations that we're bringing to the service? So timely is extremely important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next, it's about being targeted. And this is an area I'm really, really, really excited about the work we've done over the last really year or so. Mm-hmm. And that's being able to say, we have a lot of users on our service. We're very fortunate that Office 365 continues to be a fast-growing and widely adopted offering from Microsoft. And as our user base grows, the mix of things that can impact different parts of our user base, whether it's based on the parts of Office 365 you're using, mm-hmm. the location of your tenant within any of our data centers, or even the pieces of functionality that you're counting on. So when it comes to being targeted, we want to be able to have our communications only reach those tenant admins that are affected by either change that is coming, mm-hmm. like new features and functionality, or in the case of service incidents, not having to cause you concern if it doesn't impact your particular tenant.
And I think that's a really important point, because we can very easily sort of over-communicate so much that's going on around the service, around every single part of the service. But if it doesn't impact you, that extra communication is kind of watering down. It's just noise to you. So it's kind of blurring the lines of what you should be focusing on instead of just the things that impact you the most.
Yeah, and I think we're always sitting here in Redmond thinking about the balancing act between transparency and action, and what is actionable. Mm. And for certain classes of change or situations within the service, we want to make sure we're transparent but also actionable in our comms. And being targeted is one of the mechanisms by which we make that possible and why it's a critical part of our philosophy.
Great.
The third area is being accurate. And, you know, Alistair, you're probably saying, like, well, shouldn't everything be accurate?
Exactly.
But it's important because, you know, accuracy comes in many forms. You know, mm-hmm. we want to be accurate in the way we communicate things like system requirements and as they change. And sometimes accuracy means changing the conversation between, well, you need to be on this release mm-hmm. of the Office client, and saying, you know, in all fairness, we're designed to work for this version of IE or this version of the Chrome browser. And we can't tell you with accuracy what your experience is going to be like if you're using a browser that's no longer in support or part of our system requirements.
That's right.
Or if there's a service incident, you know, we've heard time and time again that you rather hear from us as soon as we know something. So you may see initial communication saying we're investigating something, but it's very important as we get more details that we continue to update these messages that are communicated to you through things that we'll talk about in a moment, and ensure that accuracy gives you what you need to feel confident about the situation.
That's right. I think it also talks to the nature of the specificity of the messages as well. Like it's one thing to say, hey, something is wrong, but it's another thing to say, hey, something's wrong with Exchange, or something is wrong with Exchange user provisioning, because it tells you your level of concern you should have. Like if it's not affecting your current users, then it's a lot less of a problem than if it's affecting, you know, new provisioning or the timeliness of delivery or something like that,
right,
rather than a full outage or anything like that.
Right. In fact, you could almost say that target and accurate go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Of course, I would argue all four of these go hand in hand. So with that, the last area is flexible. So I think these first three are table stakes, and the fourth one for me is really about making it even more aligned to the way you get things done. Mm. And the way I define flexibility is multifactored. And some of it is about giving you the flexibility to stay current on communications on the devices and places where you are. So some of the investments we'll talk about here is giving you not only the ability to stay current through in-product experiences, but also be able to use mobile devices, and also the web as a way to receive the communications you need across these four types that are hopefully timely, targeted, and accurate in nature.
Great. Yeah, and then not everyone wants to just see email every day. Not everyone wants to have to read a blog every day. So having all of those different communications methods available where you can consume it in different ways, I think is really powerful depending on how you like to work yourself.
So with that, why don't we take a moment and go through these four categories of change and think through a little bit, share with you rather, what we're doing in terms of what expectations you should have.
Sure.
As well as the communication channels we make available to you.
So perhaps like starting with updates and how we roll out functionality updates or updates to the platform itself. Can you talk us through how we communicate those and what we think about when we try to plan those out and communicate them out to users?
Sure. In fact, a really good place to start is looking at what we call our Office 365 service update principles. And this really grounds us because this is the, you know, this is the contract we are agreeing between us and you as the IT pros. And you know, it's really across three areas that are in support of our desire to deliver continuous innovation, but balanced with that confidence and control that you require as you're supporting your users in your environment. So first and foremost, one of the best benefits of the cloud is the ability to embrace the latest and greatest functionality. As quickly as we're able to design and develop and test and roll it out, you can begin using it, which is great because your users are hungry for this. Mm-hmm. And you know, they will see the benefits as quickly as you will. So you know, as we continuously deliver new features and functionality and value, you know, that's a core tenet of our update principles. And these could be minor things like fixes or even enhancements to existing functionality, or they could be major introductions, like some of the things we recently announced at the SharePoint conference, like the Office Graph, or cool technologies that can leverage on top of that, like Project Oslo or Codename Oslo. Mm-hmm. And of course, because we take care of the patching and the updating, that frees you up to focus on other aspects of getting the maximum value out of the Office 365 service.
Great.
But it's also important that we keep a fine focus on putting security as one of the most important elements of rolling out new features and functionality and updates to the service, and doing so in a way that meets the ever-evolving standards that all of us are held accountable against, whether regulatory, industry, governmental, whatever it may be. And then leveraging the fact that we have this wonderful feedback mechanism of a large number of customers and who are using this service and who have many different ways that they you can provide feedback and how you're using and how we can even provide more value to you, and creating this virtuous cycle of delivering new features and reacting and learning from feedback in a very agile way.
And what a powerful model. Like when you compare back to the old days of a 3-year release cycle where we'd spend like a year planning and then a year building and then a year testing and getting ready to launch it, that the feedback that we could get from customers often was like 3 years too late. You know, we were about to launch the next thing that we'd already set. But now with this faster release cadence, every 2 to 3 weeks, as you mentioned earlier, now that feedback loop is so much smaller and so much faster that you can see these changes come through much quicker into the service.
Yeah, and personally, even from my time, you know, working on the Exchange business as a product manager in the old model where we have awesome new features and functionality that are solving problems that we were hearing from you, our IT professionals out there, and just like waiting for this to be available. And every time you'd have a conversation with a customer, you'd be like, we've got that solution for you. So
it's in beta, but no one's going to deploy email in beta, right? Everyone wants to wait.
Not a mission critical workload
exactly,
like that.
Right.
So with all that as context, let me give you a little bit of a framework on how to think about these types of service updates. And really, it's divided into two categories that we talked about earlier: functionality updates, and in a moment we'll reflect on platform updates. Mm-hmm. So when you think about functionality updates, I like to think about them in two categories. First is feature updates, and this is, you know, the list of things that in the old model you'd have to go through the release notes and see all the little bits of functionality that may have been updated or changed release to release. Mm-hmm. Again, with our new model, we can flexibly provide these updates to the service as they're ready and as they're ready to roll out across the various workloads within the service. So some examples here, you know, where we can change change the amount of storage that we make available through OneDrive for Business, or even making improvements to the way meetings are done and conducted through Link.
Yeah.
Then there's another class of feature updates or functionality updates that we call new introductions. And this is like brand new experiences or scenarios that we can light up. Some of them, as the examples show here, could be things like providing access through whole new platforms. So Office Mobile for the iPhone is a great example of a new introduction.
Yeah.
Or even the OWA for the iOS devices as a new mail experience that is a brand new scenario, a brand new way that people can embrace.
And so the thing with brand new scenarios is it doesn't really impact the user's current day-to-day usage because it's not something they've had before. It's more of an additional capability they now have access to that they just light up. Whereas the feature updates, you're saying it's something that they're already maybe using it, but it's just in doing something different, increasing the storage capacity or adding some extra capabilities into something they're already using.
And that's a great point, because one of the things that's really important to us and why you also see on this same slide some commitments we're making in terms of the communication timing because of that very thing. Like, we're very conscious about the impact that new introductions can make on your success and your users' adoption and readiness, as well as a lot of your users already used to new features and functionality rolling out in the consumer services that they use. Mm-hmm. So this is why we have this balancing act between when it comes to feature updates, as we described as these incremental changes, enhancements, and improvements, we're looking to communicate to you from about 1 to 3 months ahead of this rolling out. So what this means is you'll see some advance notice, and in the future, we're also working towards ways to communicate this through a public roadmap process that will allow you to get an advance view, about 1 to 3 months, of these new features coming down the pike. Now, when it comes to new introductions, some of these things, again, keeping in mind that they're not necessarily going to have a direct user impact or interruption because of the change, we may save those up for big moments. Just recently, we did the announcements around a new OneNote for Mac client. That's something, one of those ones that I've heard time and time again, hey, we really want this. We really love to have this and have this extensibility of clients for OneNote. Well, we saved that up because we wanted to have a moment which came with other enhancements and improvements. And that's why here, when it comes to new introductions, we'll communicate about those upon release. And in just a moment, we'll talk a little about how we'll communicate through these two different types of functionality updates to you.
Yeah. And so then platform updates. Like, platform updates are kind of the geekier changes that we make, right? They're the API changes, or they're the patching or updates behind the scenes, or something that requires actually the IT pro to actually sit up and take notice. So how do we think about those?
Yeah, so once again, there's different types of these platform updates. Mm-hmm. And let's start from the right to left. I think that's the easiest way to look at it. So first, infrastructure improvements, again, are those things that you're looking to us to manage as the service provider to you. This is keeping servers patched. This is learning and fine-tuning and tweaking performance, as well as making sure security updates get rolled out as quickly as possible. Mm. And for these situations, we've got this. So we don't look to provide you any notice ahead of time of it happening, nor do we provide notice that it's been done, because again, this is just background noise and allows you to be freed up to focus on other areas.
And again, it's kind of table stakes for a cloud service, right? This is the value of a cloud service. To just take care of this without even worrying you in the background.
That's right. But as you mentioned earlier, there are some types of platform changes that do require you to take action to avoid any kind of interruption of your service experience. The first type of those are configuration changes. And from time to time, we may need you to take some action, like updating an MX record, going in and tweaking your auto-config settings. And that's done to ensure we can provide you a highly reliable and resilient service. And sometimes that requires us to make some changes changes to our infrastructure, mm-hmm. which then trickles down to changes for you. So we do our best to give you up to 12 months notice about these changes, communicating through some of these very channels that we'll talk about in just a moment. But it's really important that you do heed when you see notification of these changes, because you know we're very sensitive to any kind of interruption that could take place to your experience. And often we do things behind the scenes to keep you current, but it's important that, again, this is part of your end of the contract to help keep the service up and running and healthy for you. Mm. And then lastly, these are disruptive changes. And I totally and readily admit that disruption like beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
One person's disruption could be another person's background noise. Mm. But we do focus on certain types of disruption where we are going to commit to you to provide 1 year's notice. The first is API changes. We know many of you build on top of the functionality, whether it's in SharePoint or using Exchange or Yammer or whatever it may be. And that if we make tweaks to the APIs to change functionality or introduce new capabilities, we want to make sure that you have enough advance notice to make changes to your code. And that's for you within our businesses and the organizations, as well as our ISV partners who have a chance to update their capabilities.
Great.
The second type is deprecation. And sometimes, features or functionality, their life cycle has come to an end. And it's important for you to have enough advance notice, again, 1 year's notice, to either move to where the new destination is or to follow any of the guidance we provide about how to move forward if you're still looking at some of this functionality as part of your day-to-day operations. Mm. I think a good example there is our recent announcement around the future of InfoPath mm-hmm. and providing you enough advance notice to move to the functionality that is going to be invested in moving forward. And then lastly, system requirement change. And we already talked about our story there, and we'll even go separately into a section in a few moments. But it's really important that you stay current on what our system requirements are. And in return for that, we will make sure to give you 1 year's advance notice so you can be ready to roll out those changes in your environment.
Yeah. And it's, the system requirements are the part of your infrastructure that really touch Office 365 that you kind of need to keep in lockstep or as close as you can to that environment. It's one thing to have like a constantly upgrading car, but you don't want the old wheels. Right? You don't want to bring the old wheels forward every time. You're not going to get that same experience. So it's important that even though we're freeing up some of that capability on the service side by giving you all the latest and greatest, it's your job to make sure you can keep pace with your on-premises assets as well.
Yeah, and we certainly want to make sure that your users get the best experience, and a lot of times those best experiences are only lit up with the latest and greatest functionality. Mm. Yeah. So why don't we spend a few moments talking about some of the communication channels that we have to inform you of these changes.
Yep.
So we spoke through what you can look to us, the framework by which we are communicating to you based on these different types of change. One of the first places, and I hope everyone is bookmarking this after they watch this video, is the Office 365 blog. And this is the place that when we release new functionality, when we have new introductions, this is the place where you get to hear the story. And we have the people who work on these different features or these different enhancements tell you the story about what to look forward to in these releases. So, for example, we recently had an enhancement done to S/MIME encryption now being available in Office 365. Well, mm-hmm. It's great to have the product manager, Paul Andrew, come in and tell you the thinking behind it and how you can embrace this functionality. Mm-hmm. So for many, this is the channel they watch to learn about what's coming in the service as it's being released. And then over time, these new introductions are moved to the service descriptions in TechNet, mm-hmm. so you have your one single view of everything that's in the service.
Sure. And that's a great capability. I mean, even for myself, there's such a wide variety of services inside of Office 365 now that we have such a wide team. I even find just in my day-to-day job, reading the blog helps me keep up to date with all the different happenings and going-ons and all the different services and workloads that Office 365 provides.
Yeah, I find it really inspiring because I think in the past, it may have been more challenging to fully grok and embrace everything that would come in a release of like a server product.
Yeah.
And now because it's coming on this release cadence, you get the chance to just focus on one element of it. And then also think about how your organization can roll this out and embrace it and get your users using it. So once again, I encourage you to visit the blogs.office.com, and from there you can be a participant in the process of learning about all the changes. And of course, you can subscribe to it and have it show up in your favorite feed readers, and certainly share any of these posts through the various forms of social networking. So if you want to help others get excited about it too. Now, what about in-product experiences? And one area that you've seen us invest in is what we call the Message Center. And you know, this is a great single one-stop shop for you, especially as tenant admins, to go and have an authoritative source of information as it pertains to the operation and the service management of your Office 365 tenant. The Message Center in-product notifications, this is really a complement to the other forms of communications we send out. But it also gives you clear information about what actions you may need to take. So within the Office 365 Message Center, which you find right on the homepage of the Office 365 Admin Center, you can see, for example, when we introduce new change on a monthly basis, one of these type of notifications will show up, which is, hey, this is what's new in January. And Alistair, you're probably not surprised to see that we then link out to the blog for the details. So, you know, we don't want to replace what we're doing on the blog here, but we want to give you as admins a single location to be notified in the product that you're using and where you spend your time.
Great.
And then another interesting thing, and this is quite interesting and one of the nice side effects of having this constant feedback loop, is we've added this little notification bell. Hopefully you've noticed this as you've been using the Office 365 Administrative Center. By adding that little notification bell, it has helped the open rate of these notifications go above and beyond what we were doing through email in the past. So you can count on that as a way to stay informed when there's change coming and that there's action for you to take.
Right. Does it play a little noise as well, like, uh-oh, remember that?
That's a good feature request. Okay. We should get that back to Jake.
Right.
Okay, so we spent a good amount of time on when new things come to the service and the ways that we can communicate to you. Another area I get a lot of questions around is, you know, how do I stay current on system requirements? And I'll be the first to admit, We had a lot of sources of truth when it came to system requirements, and we're working very hard to minimize that and give you a single place where you can stay current on this.
And this is different to a support lifecycle, for instance. So a lot of our products, they have a 5-year plus 5-year extended support lifecycle, but now we're talking about system requirements for those products that connect into Office 365, not the supportability of those products themselves.
That's a good segue to spending a few moments just thinking through what our Office 365 client support policy is. And you're right. I think the great rule of thumb to use, if I ask folks watching to memorize two things, well, maybe three, including the link to the blog.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the Office 365 client support policy, it's pretty straightforward. We ask that you use either the current or the most recent version of Internet Explorer or Firefox, or the current version of Chrome or Safari when you're connecting via the web. The Chrome and Safari, by their very nature, stay update. Like, you don't have a choice to go back to a previous one. But when it comes to Internet Explorer or Firefox as web browsers, you need to be on the current one or the previous version.
Yeah.
And the same is true for Office client apps. So, like, you know, Outlook or PowerPoint or the other Office applications. Our client support policy is about being on any version that's currently in mainstream support.
Sure.
Now, that's easy to say. What is the actual experience? We design Office 365 to work with these modern browsers and the modern releases of Office client apps to ensure that all the experiences you're investing in and all the new innovation we're bringing to the product is something you can experience. And that's not necessarily possible if you're using older versions of products. So, you know, take web browsing technology.
Yeah.
Often, the engines that power these older web browsers don't have the new features to light up great new experiences. But that said, our policy our policy is not to deliberately block you if you're trying to connect to Office 365 using an older version of IE or Firefox or even an older version of the Office apps.
Mm-hmm. So really it's more about that's kind of the products that are in our test matrix. So we have Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Office clients that are still under mainstream support, then of course Mac, PC, Windows 8, Windows 7, Windows RT, Android, iPhone, iOS. So there's quite a lot of things in that support matrix, in that test matrix that we can actually test every release for. So we're saying that those ones we can actually guarantee will work great, but we're not actually going to block any of the older versions for trying to connect or do anything that deliberately breaks that experience.
Right. And in fact, when it comes to operating systems, our stance is probably no different than the manufacturers who provide the devices and systems that you're using.
Yeah.
Like, we require a supported OS.
Yeah.
Right? So I know you really want to connect Office 365 with your TRS-80, but unfortunately, that is not a supported OS at the moment. So,
feature request?
We'll take it under consideration. We like the feedback.
Yeah. So.
But in all seriousness, Alistair is correct that while we'll not deliberately block any connections, we can't guarantee that your experience will remain the same. In fact, it's possible some things will just stop working over mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
And certainly, we make no commitment to new features being able to be lit up or available through this.
Sure.
We really minimize the amount of work we will do. Just keeping in mind that our update principles is heavily focused on security. So, you'll see, and as we talk about in a moment, of tools you can use to stay current, we do our best to also indicate if there's going to be a significant reduction in experience. We try to flag that for you, but as you mentioned, the permutations and the number of things we need to test for, we rather focus on the areas where you're going to get maximum experiential benefits
mm-hmm.
versus trying to go back and say, okay, this is what will or will not work with older, non-modern versions of the clients.
Sure. And hopefully by taking on all that patch management and server management on the server side means that as an organization, you can move your own on-premises environments further, faster, and free up some time to keep current in that environment as well.
In fact, we help you out by providing you Office 365 Pro Plus, which is a way for you to stay current on your Office client side,
mm-hmm.
And that streams down new functionality, much in the same way that we keep things updated on the services side. So it's a great 1-2 punch if you do have concerns about your Office client, that this is a way for you to utilize the technology that's within Office 365 to do so.
Great.
So how do you stay current? I alluded to it earlier that we used to have many sources of truth, and I know there are still some out there, but going back to our communication philosophy about being timely and accurate, it was important for us to bring all these system requirements information into a single place.
Yeah.
And we've now done so utilizing a new section inside of the service descriptions that you can find in TechNet, which are also translated to mm-hmm. all the important languages out there,
mm-hmm.
and ensures that it's easily consumed no matter where you are or where your users may be.
Great.
And you can visit this. I provided in the slide here this long link to the U.S. language version, but pop it into Bing and you'll be able to very quickly get to the language specific version of the system requirements inside of our service descriptions in TechNet. Now, as I said earlier, and you can even see this in the webpage, very very well detailed in the opening paragraphs of the system requirements, that we provide that 1-year notice of changes to these system requirements. But when you look at our disruptive change policy all up, which is really fueling a lot of this framework, again, this is not necessarily something that we haven't done in the past. In fact, in some cases, when it comes to browsers or it comes to the Office clients, we give you more than a year's notice because of our support lifecycle policy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I just want to stress that I realize that disruptive change can mean different things to different people. Our definition here is very akin to if it requires you or your users to take some kind of action to avoid a disruption or a significant change in experience, we want to give you that advance notice.
Great.
And of course, that advance notice is not only provided through the TechNet article. We would use things like in-product experiences, like the Message Center, as well as email communications and other ways to reach you.
Great. And that's something we've seen with some of those disruptive changes already, when we've seen users try and hit the service from older browsers or from older operating systems. We actually have proactive email messages that have gone out to those users and appear in the Message Center, right?
Yeah, or probably the one that's top of mind for most is the Windows XP IE8 end of support. Mm. For those of you who are already in Office 365 today, you probably noticed that in your Message Center, there's been a message there posted for some time with links to our guidance and what your expected experience should be, as well as giving you the confidence that as you move to newer browsers that your experience will be what you subscribed for.
Great.
So,
yeah.
So let's talk about the last type of change. And you know, we talked about a range of changes already, some of which are fairly predictable. And then there's a set of change that's not predictable, and that's what we call service incidents.
Right. And so this is where you answer that age-old question of why do bad things happen to good people?
Yes. When they do, we want to make sure that you have confidence in us that, one, we're on it.
Yeah.
Two, you'll stay informed of what's happening. And three, you'll be informed of what happened once we resolved it.
Sure.
And service incidents is something we take very seriously. Mm. And we spend a lot of time and invest constantly improving the process and learning from each one.
Yeah.
But I think it's important before we dive into how we help you during service incidents, is just to remind you that Office 365 has service continuity built into it by design.
Yeah.
We're not just reacting. We have a number of different features and functionality and investments at a number of different levels already in the platform that you can rely upon, whether it's redundancy and having different levels of redundancy across physical locations with data centers, data redundancy through high availability and disaster recovery, or even functional redundancy where we're keeping different modules isolated from each other, or resiliency where we have load balancing, or distributing workloads so you know you don't have monolithic or you know the phrase of single points of failure.
Yeah.
And then of course we also invest heavily in automation as a means to get ahead of things more quickly than potentially any human can do. And this is particularly important when you look at the monitoring and the level of monitoring that we do across the service to try to identify things before they boil over.
Absolutely. I mean, we're not as arrogant to expect that things will always run right. And if you've been in IT for any length of time, you know that things will go wrong all the time. So it's about preparing for that and making sure that we're ready to respond to that and putting in place systems so that the next time that same thing happens, it doesn't cause an outage or an incident or a service interruption.
Right. Any service provider is not spending their time thinking about mean time to failure.
Yeah.
They're thinking about, at least we do, mean time to recovery.
Yeah.
Because hard drives burn out, network connections get cut, you know, components can fail.
Yeah.
But the important thing is to know that we have a mix of automation, monitoring, and of course human intervention that can come in. And we do a lot of work after the fact to learn from every situation. And I'll tell you, the ones that you don't even hear about, we learn from, as well as the ones, unfortunately, that have larger impact. Mm. Every one of these incidents have lessons learned that we try to apply back into the service each and every time to continue to get better.
Great.
So when a service incident happens, I think there's a number of important steps to know about. First and foremost, something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this can range. These are not just big outages. This could be minor component issues, degradation in experience, slow performance. Like, there's a number of things that can classify as an incident. And as you probably noticed through our communication channels, and I think you alluded to this earlier, you mentioned it earlier, that you know we do our best not to make it an Office 365 issue. Mm-hmm. We try to say, hey, this is affecting Link, or this is affecting Exchange, or affecting Yammer, or the Office client. We do so under the philosophy of being targeted and accurate.
Sure.
So when something does happen, your go-to vehicle is what we call the service health dashboard. And this is something we'll show you in just a moment. But as soon as we get any inkling of something, and we've heard from you, you prefer us letting you know once we're investigating something versus getting a higher level of confidence that there's something going on. Because you prefer us to say, hey, nothing actually went wrong versus getting caught off guard when we're down the path of a service incident.
Yeah.
So that's why you may see in cases when you visit Service Health Dashboard, there's like, hey, we're currently investigating something.
Mm-hmm.
And that we promise to give you updates at a predictable, regular cadence.
Sure.
So we continue to post details of the incident onto the Service Health Dashboard. This is something we do until the issue is resolved. In fact, if you look, you'll see timestamps, you'll see updates being added, new notes, and often they get more and more detail and they get longer in length. And then once the problem is resolved, which is hopefully a very fast turnaround, you'll also see us provide a closure summary, which gives you a little bit of a glimpse of, hey, this is what actually happened, and this is what we've done. And sometimes you'll really be happy to see things like, by design, we failed over, or you know, per our resiliency, this is now shifted to a different workload.
Like, yeah.
There's a lot of things that you'll see that just, again, gives you confidence that this is not something we're making up each time when it happens. And then lastly, and as appropriate, we may provide what's called a post-incident review, which is, again, is posted into the Service Health Dashboard, which is just a little bit more granular detail about a particular incident.
Great.
And that's done as appropriate.
Right. And so this is a post-incident review that you can attach and give to your IT management to say, hey, here's the issue we encountered. It adds a little bit of the stuff that we can see from inside of the data center and inside of our environment. And you may want to combine it in with the things you saw, like if you saw an increase in help desk calls or particular issues with particular sites and those sorts of things. You can use that extra information to paint the full picture to your own management.
Yeah, because we fully appreciate that you're on the hook as the IT pros in the environment. And you know, we want to make sure that you're armed with the information you need to best represent the situation to your users and to your management. So so what's your go-to communication tool for that? I've already talked about it, and that's the Service Health Dashboard. Just like the Message Center, this is an in-product experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach it by going to the Office 365 Admin Center.
Yeah.
We give you some high-level status on the whole page.
It's like the first thing you see when you log in, right? It's the status, the tick, 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 tick. It's a good day.
yes. And it's important for us, especially as admins, to give you that right on your main dashboard, a high level view of the health of the services you're subscribed to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when you click in the link that says the Service Health Dashboard, you get this much more granular view of all the different workloads. You know, you'll notice that even underneath some of the major ones, there's sub workloads that we monitor. And we give you a historical view so you can get a sense like, maybe something happened over the weekend and you know the few folks who were working over the weekend got impacted by it. But when you come in Monday morning, you can see, oh, there was something. You can click on it and you can get the color commentary about what has happened.
Yeah. I think that's the thing I love about the Service Health Dashboard. It gives you so much more granularity than even you get on premises. Like, you know, perhaps that your Exchange server was up, or you could diagnose and debug which particular area was down, but there was no kind of simple, easy to look at view that would tell you all the different components in your environment. You kind of have to build that yourself.
Right.
Built like with API calls and different system monitoring tools and third-party agents and all this thing, just to get that one view of the truth of your entire environment functioning. And that's all brought together in the Service Health Dashboard.
And it really is your first and best source for this content. Going back to our philosophy about being targeted, it's also important to note that we do our best to make sure anything that shows up in the Service Health Dashboard is something that affects the parts of Office 365 that your users are on. You know, whether it's a regional view or even down to the workload view, you can count on the Service Health Dashboard as being as targeted as possible. And you know, this is one of the reasons why we put this in the Admin Center and don't just simply publish it out on the web.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because we have a particular allergy to sharing the health of our service. It's because we want you to log in so we know who you are and we can give you a personalized, targeted view on the health of your services.
Sure.
And then again, this is updated hourly, so you can look to this as a regularly refresh resource for you to stay current when service incidents happen, mm-hmm. and that historical look back. And you can see that we provide a range of detail for you throughout the life cycle of a service incident, all the way from when we're just our monitoring or some of our automation or even some of the insights from our frontline support, our customers calling in, our fields who are supporting you, our partners, mm-hmm. you know, all the way to when service has been fully restored. Yeah. And you'll see these different states move through. Some maybe jumps, mm-hmm. Or you'll just see the natural comms reflect as we move each of these stages. So you can stay current.
And it's great. It's not just red, yellow, green, right? It's very granular in what you can actually see here. Not just service interruptions, but also will highlight service degradations when things are acting a little bit slower. And likewise with the recovery. If recovery is taking longer than we expect it to take, we'll actually show an extended recovery so you can know that there's something going on. And there'll be an extra description behind the scenes about why that particular status is the way it is.
Yeah, I would even encourage you to cut this slide out and keep it as a cheat sheet so you can very quickly, just by looking at the iconography, know where things are at in the Service Health dashboard. So, Alistair, earlier we also talked about our communications philosophy about mm-hmm. having the flexibility to have this information where you are. It may not be possible for you to log into the Service Health dashboard every time. So that's why we have a couple of options for you. First and foremost is the Office 365 admin app.
Yeah.
This is awesome. We introduced this last fall, and we've already had tens of thousands of tenant admins download these apps, not just on one, but across iOS devices, Android devices, and of course, Windows Phone. And as you can see here from the screenshot, this gives you, again, tenant specific. So you log in with your credentials, so you're seeing just what's impacting your tenant against your different workloads. And you can get this information while you're on the go.
Great.
And we're going to continue to invest in this app and you know keep watching this space and learn more as we introduce new features and functionality to
it.
But my call to action for everyone watching is to download this through the respective app store.
So it's like the Office 365 baby monitor. You can wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning, check the little app, like, oh, yes, everything's good. I'll go back to sleep.
That's right.
And try again the other day.
Yeah, the convenience of having it right in the palm of your hand, wherever you may be. Mm-hmm. And truly, are any of us without our smartphones anymore?
Right. Right, what if you prefer to use something like PowerShell, though? Is there a way that through code or through some other way I can check the status of my Office 365 tenant?
You know, I'm personally a huge fan of PowerShell. So while we're getting there, we are going to be introducing very shortly what we call a Service Health API. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly four of the reasons that Alistair mentioned is to provide you a way to take and consume the Service Health dashboard information specific to your environment and pull it into your existing processes. Mm-hmm. So we know it's none too uncommon that you probably have a Service Health dashboard or an IT dashboard that communicates the health of all of your IT services in your environment. Well, I mean, we have one here certainly at Microsoft, and you know, it'd be great if your users, regardless if what they're concerned about is on Office 365 or concerns your own line of business applications, wherever it may be, to have a single place to go. So with this new Service Health API that we'll be introducing, you can query that and pull that information into your existing dashboards, your help desk systems, even your notification and paging processes. Much in the same way that we do here for when something may pop up in our monitoring, you can do the same thing and notify your on-call folks. So they can stay abreast of what's happening.
Great. So now I can be automatically woken up in the middle of the night. Thanks, Ian.
You can integrate it into your baby monitor.
Yeah, so there we go.
So, and then lastly, especially for those who are watching who may be partners, we heard your feedback about the importance to be able to be a good partner for Microsoft and for your customers and be able to understand what is affecting the tenants you're supporting on behalf of the customers who are working with you. So very recently, and if you were a constant visitor to the Office 365 blog, you would have seen the announcement that we've introduced this new Office 365 Partner Admin Center. And this is a one-stop location that gives you the ability to view in a single place, all the customers who have given you delegated on admin privileges, so you can do things on their behalf. You can do a number of tasks, and probably most importantly, this middle line here, you can view those customers' Office 365 service health dashboard and details. Because again, what may be affecting one customer may not be affecting another, or even you as your own tenant.
Yeah.
But this gives you that visibility into it. And if there are things there that you could take action on behalf of your customer, you can even help create, view, and hopefully even help close any service requests that may pop up.
Great.
Keep watching this space. There's even more stuff we're investing in here. And of course, the Office 365 blog is a great place to stay current on the investments we're making here in this communication channel.
Great. So let's summarize a couple of things that we've seen today in this service management session, service communication, sorry. So, you know, what it means to be in the cloud is a very interesting thing, right? It's a change from that wave approach to a ripple approach, from like a big capital expenditure cost every 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years into something that's just this trickle of change that happens every couple of weeks that we have to be ready for. It's a much more operational approach as well. There's a lot of different communications channels we talked about there as well. And so make sure that you bookmark the Office 365 blog, you check out the Admin Center regularly, as well. Any others that you can think of? The app, of course, is a key one.
Yeah, my key takeaways for folks watching this is, first and foremost, you're right. Embrace what change means in the cloud. This is going to be very different, but it's a good kind of different.
Yeah.
But we need to make sure that we're all setting the right expectations with ourselves, with you as the IT pro supporting this, and of course, with your users and your leadership. You stole my best line. Visit and bookmark those channels we talked about.
Yeah.
The Office blog, the service descriptions in TechNet, which is also your source of system requirements, and then look to those communication channels amongst the others, like the Service Health Dashboard, the Message Center within the product.
Mm-hmm.
Do stay current on the roadmap of what's coming down the line in both new functionality and platform changes. Download that Office 365 admin app. If you haven't done so by this point, I'm going to ask you again in a few moments. Leverage the Service Health Dashboard. It is your single source of the truth when service incidents happen. It keeps you current through the life cycle of a service incident and gives you the information you need to understand what actually happened. And last but not least, continue to please provide us the feedback on how we can improve. I love the fact about how quickly we can react to your feedback. In fact, some of the things we even showed here today are responses to feedback that you've already provided us. And this wasn't feedback you provided us 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This was feedback that was provided very recently.
That's right. And so there are a number of different feedback channels that IT pros can tap into, whether it's service requests in the Office 365 admin portal directly, whether it's comments on the blog, comments on our Twitter handles that we manage. We even have a Yammer network at yammer.com/ITProNetwork that you can join in as well. And we're constantly monitoring all of these channels for your feedback as well. We act on them really quickly.
Yeah, me and my team, we're on that channel as well. And also look for us at events and other places where we may be, whether they're Ignites or there are opportunities at events like SharePoint Conference to give us the feedback to help us improve and make it even a better experience for you.
Great. So thanks very much for listening for this session on Office 365 Service Communications.